Good to see everyone here this morning. I see a lot of familiar faces. I see a few faces that I don't recognize. It's good to have each and every one of you here with us this morning. As we read just a few minutes ago, our passage, if you'll turn over to Hebrews chapter 14, I want to discuss the compassion of Jesus Christ. But I want to discuss the reason that he has compassion on us. Because Jesus, I went the wrong direction there. Jesus is one of us. He was made a man, and he came, and he lived on this earth as a man. And it says that he suffered all of the things that we do, and that he lived through these trials so that he might deal gently with us. What does that mean? There's a psychologist, a human psychologist named Paul Ekman, and he has done some fascinating work identifying emotions that are universal to the human experience. Through a series of studies over years of different methods of looking at faces, photographing faces as people are experiencing different emotions, taking those pictures and showing them to people across different cultures, even photographing people who are blind experiencing emotions. What he has found is that all over the world, across every culture that exists, every human being expresses six basic emotions in the exact same way. Now, for those of us who believe in a God who created us in his image, that probably doesn't come as a massive surprise. We should be able to recognize these emotions and these feelings in each other and in ourselves because God created us all in the same way. Now, some debate Ekman's work, but as a scientist, I have to inform you of that. He does have a data-driven approach. His investigation methods are convincing for me. So I'm going to go with six basic human emotions this morning. Now, those six emotions are happiness, sadness, anger, fear, disgust, and surprise. And if you follow Ekman's work, he has very specific muscles that are engaged in how your eyebrows and your mouth and the corners of your eyes, all through your face, how they reveal things about how you feel. I want to highlight a couple of the pieces of Hebrews that was read for us this morning. Look at Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tested in every way as we are, yet without sin. Or Hebrews chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. For every high priest taken from men is appointed in service to God for the people to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and going astray, since he is also subject to weaknesses. And then in verses 7 and 8, during his earthly life, he offered prayers and appeals with loud cries and tears to the one who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Though he was God's son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. What do these universal emotions look like? Happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, surprise. If I told you that in the Bible, Jesus expresses each one of these emotions, and that he went through all of these things that are universal to the human experience, that also wouldn't come as a surprise to you. What I want to do this morning is to bring you closer to Jesus. I want to bring you closer to the humanity of Christ and show you how he suffered through all of these things, how he lived through all of these things, so that in his experiences, he could learn to have compassion and deal gently with us. I want to show you that the things that you have felt in the past, the things that you are feeling this morning, the things that you might feel in the future, are all emotions that Jesus himself had to process and to go through as a human being. We might be tempted to judge each other harshly, but what the Bible says about Jesus is that the things that he felt that tested him made him more sympathetic to us. If we want to draw closer to Jesus, we need to use the experiences that we have to become more sympathetic, to deal gently with others, just like he did. Let's begin with surprise. I like to begin with this one because it might surprise you that Jesus felt surprise. Turn over to Luke chapter 7, and we'll read Luke chapter 7, verses 1 through 9. After Jesus had finished teaching all this to the people, he entered Capernaum. A centurion there had a slave who was highly regarded, but who was sick and at the point of death. When the centurion heard about Jesus, he sent some Jewish elders to him, asking him to come and heal his slave. When they came to Jesus, they urged him earnestly, "He is worthy to do this for him, because he loves our nation and even built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. When he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not presume to come to you. Instead, say the word, and my servant must be healed. For I, too, am a man set under authority. With soldiers under me, I say to this one, 'Go,' and he goes, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my slave, 'Do this,' and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. He turned and said to the crowd that followed him, "I tell you, not even in Israel have I found such faith." That word, amazed, is an expression of surprise. The way the centurion expresses his faith in Jesus is something that Jesus finds amazing. It's hard for me to imagine Jesus being surprised by anything, yet not only is he amazed, but he turns and he shares it with the crowd. He brings them into it. This is impressive. And Jesus wants the people following him to see it. He wants you to see it too. That's why it's written for us. What about that? What do you think about a man who can impress and amaze the Son of God? Don't you want to impress and amaze God? Think about men and women in the Bible whose expressions of faith were so great that even God is impressed with them. You think about Daniel. God sends the angel to and says, "From the very moment that I heard your prayer and supplication, I was sent to you because you are highly esteemed by God." Daniel impressed God. You can think about the centurion here whose expression of faith. He says, "Not even in Israel have I found such faith." It's an amazing thing. It's impressive. We could also look at anger. I know the example most of you might be thinking of, but it's not the one I'm going to go to. I have to explain. In years past, when I've done my Bible reading, I used to use the New American Standard or the English Standard Version. Last year, I read the entire Bible in the Holman Christian Standard Version, and it gave me a little bit of a different reading than what I was used to. So this year, I said, well, I'll do all of my reading in the NET Version, since that's also a good translation of the Bible. And what's been really fascinating to me is how different translators choose to word things in ways that are faithful to the translation, but also give you a little bit of a different impression of the things that were said. And so this whole lesson comes from the fact that I was doing my daily Bible reading, and I was reading in the NET Bible, and I read Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. Now listen to how it reads in the NET Bible. "On that day, when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, 'Let's go across to the other side of the lake.' So after leaving the crowd, they took him along just as he was in the boat, and other boats were with him. Now a great windstorm developed, and the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was nearly swamped. But he was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. They woke him up and said to him, 'Teacher, don't you care that we are about to die?' So he got up, and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Be quiet, calm down." Then the wind stopped and it was dead calm. And he said to them, "Why are you cowardly? Do you still not have faith?" They were overwhelmed by fear and said to one another, "Who then is this? Even the wind and sea obey him." You see where this passage gave me this idea? Because Jesus is asleep. He's tired. And I know many of us in the audience can sympathize with a man who is very tired from working, dealing with people, and he's finally found a moment to himself to sleep in the stern of the boat. In fact, he's so soundly asleep that here's this great windstorm that is causing his disciples to panic, and he's sleeping through it. It's like sleeping. Can you imagine trying to sleep through a hurricane or a tornado? Sometimes just enough wind wakes me up at night. Jesus slept through it. And his disciples come down, and they make him wake up. And they say, "Don't you care that we're about to die?" And the net sounds so tired and frustrated. He rebukes the wind. He says, "Be quiet. Calm down. Stop it." And it listens. And then he turns to his disciples and he says, can you hear the exasperation left in his voice? "Why are you cowardly? Do you not have faith?" Jesus got tired and exasperated and frustrated, just like you and I do. What about disgust? Disgust is a strong emotion that evokes revulsion or strong disapproval of something unpleasant or deeply offensive. I want you to look at Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. We're already in Mark chapter 4. Just turn back a couple of pages. Where Jesus entered the synagogue again, and a man was there who had a withered hand. They watched Jesus closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they could accuse him. So he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Stand up among all these people." Then he said to them, "Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or evil, to save a life or to destroy it?" But they were silent. After looking around at them in anger, grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. So the Pharisees went out immediately and began plotting with the Herodians as to how they could assassinate him. This particular combination of angry and sad is disgust. Jesus is offended by their hypocrisy. In fact, it's so deeply offensive how hypocritical the Pharisees and experts in the law are that he goes on to express in Matthew chapter 23 some woes specifically to them. They should have been teachers of the law. But we read about how Jesus felt about them in the statements that he made. Turn over to Matthew chapter 23. And we won't read the entire statement that he says against the pronunciation against them. But I want to point out in Matthew chapter 3, verses 25 through 28, he says, "Woe to you, experts in the law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup so the outside may become clean too. Woe to you, experts in the law, and you Pharisees, hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs that look beautiful on the outside, but inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you look righteous to people, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." Under the old law, what kind of attitude were they supposed to have towards the dead, towards bones, towards things that were unclean? They were supposed to be repulsive to to them. It was supposed to be something that they avoided even touching, if possible. They had rituals that they had to undergo to become clean again after they touched a bone or after they touched a carcass, even for friends and loved ones that they were burying. Under the law, bones, the dead, uncleanness, were all things that were meant to evoke revulsion and a sense of unpleasantness. And Jesus calls the Pharisees dirty dishes and graves. He is disgusted by their behavior and by their teaching. We also need to be disgusted by hypocrisy. We need to be disgusted when we encounter things that look good on the outside but are rotten on the inside. Sometimes that means we're disgusted with ourselves and our own behaviors, and it's deeply offensive to us. What about happiness? While we may not have moments recorded in the Gospels where Jesus laughed, we do have plenty of times where he taught and spoke about joy. We have parables about joy. In Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 32, there are multiple parables. I won't read them all for time's sake, but multiple parables in which joy is expressed. Turn with me over to Luke chapter 15 in verse 6. In the parable of the lost sheep, he says, "Returning home, he," that is the shepherd, "calls together his friends and neighbors, telling them, 'Rejoice with me, because I have found my sheep that was lost.'" And in the parable of the lost coin, down in verse 9, "Then when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.'" And then in verses 22 through 24, the parable of the prodigal son, but perhaps more appropriately, the parable of the compassionate father. "Hurt, but the father said to his slaves, 'Hurry, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate, because this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." Jesus shows us how much joy it brought him when the lost were found, when people changed their lives to be closer to God. What does he say to Zacchaeus? He says, "Today salvation has come to this house." He says, "The angels in heaven rejoice over one who is lost who returns to God." Jesus' life embodies joy as he goes to his people and he finds the lost sheep of Israel and brings them back to God. Jesus spoke of his joy for his disciples in John chapter 15, verses 9 through 12. "Just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Remain in my love. If you obey my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commandments and remain in his love. I have told you these things so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. My commandment is this, to love one another just as I have loved you." Do you hear what Jesus is saying to his disciples? He intertwines the concepts of love and joy. But he also tells us that I have this joy within me that I want to share with you. And the way Jesus shares that joy with us is when we love each other as he loved us. The joy that Jesus felt is something he wants to pass on to all of his disciples, including us. The living Word experiences happiness and joy when we love each other. For the sadness, I am going to use the ESV translation, because Isaiah chapter 53 and verse 3 calls Jesus a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. In John chapter 11, verses 32 through 35, we see Jesus grieving over Lazarus. When Mary came to the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the people who had come with her weeping, he was intensely moved in spirit and greatly distressed. He asked, "Where have you laid him?" They replied, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. Jesus is deeply moved by the sorrow of the people around him. Jesus is deeply moved by our sorrow, by the things that hurt us. He empathizes with the people here who are weeping and mourning for Lazarus. He empathizes with Mary and Martha who have lost their brother. He is greatly distressed at death. He is offended at death. He's moved to tears as he arrives at Lazarus's tomb. In Luke chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, Jesus is going to lament over Jerusalem. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those who are sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you would have none of it. Look, your house is forsaken." Jesus wants to gather Jerusalem and indeed all the world to himself. But many have refused and do not want to hear his voice. And for all of those who refuse to hear his voice, Jesus laments and is sorrowful. We don't usually think of Jesus as being fearful, but look with me at Jesus in Gethsemane. I'll be reading from Matthew, Luke, and Mark. We'll start in Matthew chapter 26, verses 36 through 39. "Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and became anguished and distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is deeply grieved, even to the point of death. Remain here and stay awake with me.' Going a little farther, he threw himself down with his face to the ground and prayed, 'My Father, if possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will.'" Mark chapter 14, verses 32 through 36. "Then they went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I pray.' He took Peter, James, and John with him, and he became very troubled and distressed. He said to them, 'My soul is deeply grieved, even to the point of death. Remain here and stay alert.' Going a little farther, he threw himself to the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour would pass from him. He said, 'Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will.'" Luke chapter 22, verses 39 through 44. "Then Jesus went out and made his way, as he customarily did, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him. When he came to the place, he said to them, 'Pray that you will not fall into temptation.' He went away from them about a stone's throw, knelt down and prayed, 'Father, if you are willing, take this cup away from me, yet not my will, but yours be done.' Then an angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him, and in his anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground." Look at the words that describe how Jesus felt: anguish, distress, troubled, deeply grieved. These are words of sorrow, but even deeper than that, anxiety. Jesus prays that what's coming could pass from him. He does not want to go through this. It is a great source of anxiety to him. Now look at the words describing what Jesus did. He threw himself down with his face to the ground. He prayed more earnestly. His sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. And listen to the anxious words that Jesus spoke. If possible, let this cup pass from me. How did Jesus deal with his fear? He prayed to the Father. And when he was even more distressed, he prayed more earnestly. He brought friends with him to share in his distress, even though they fell asleep, even though they fell short. He sought the company of his closest disciples, and he sought his Father in prayer. I close with this scene of fear and woe as we describe it in one of our songs. Because this is the day that many people celebrate as the day of the year when Jesus was resurrected. A day of joy and gladness. But before Jesus could come to that day, he was angry. He was sorrowful. He was disgusted. He was surprised. He was joyful. And he was even fearful. Jesus experienced all of these other emotions as a man walking this earth, so that as we read in Hebrews, he could sympathize with our weaknesses so that he could deal gently with us. If God sent his only Son to this earth to experience all of these things from our perspective, for the purpose of him sympathizing with us and dealing gently with us, should we not take our own experiences and learn that from them, to deal gently with others and to sympathize with our fellow man, to rejoice with those who rejoice, to weep with those who weep, to comfort those who are sorrowful, soothe those who are angry. In doing so, like Christ did, we will find ourselves able to rise above the sadness and the anger and the disgust to feel the joy of Christ in us. He experienced death so that we could be freed from our sins and be reconciled to God, and make that joy complete. If this world is bringing you down with fear, with sorrow, with anger, with disgust, Christ invites you to lay that burden on him, to come to him knowing that he sympathizes with you, that he experienced all of those things too. Everyone in this room has experienced all of these emotions. We two are ready to help you. If you are ready to begin a walk with Christ, or if you've stepped into the world and you want to step back out and walk again in the light of joy of Jesus Christ,